Kun det beste for den beste, sa han, og hun kjente at det kriblet langt inn i ryggmargen. Selv om hun kanskje egentlig syntes sjokolademilkshake var bedre enn vanilje. Men det viktigste var at han syntes vanilje var best, og at hun var like bra. Så hun kastet seg over han og kysset han lenge, 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 helt til de hørte at det tutet fra bilene bak. Og de kjørte videre og hentet burgerne og milkshakene sine. Ja, det er sånne ting som skjer i drive-thru noen ganger. For sånn er livet, og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Jernverket som ukentlig podcast nærmer seg slutten, så nå blir jeg bare snavel. Hells på Repulsion intervjuet når de spilt I Norge. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, her Jernverket. Men du, før intervjuet noe jeg må si. For det gratis å lage Jernverket, så om du vil støtte produksjonen av programmet, det helt genialt om du vil donere et par slanter. Det går an å trekke et fast beløp hver måned via patreon.com/jernverket eller gi en enkeltsum via VIPS nummer 567438. Informasjon og lenkene står I episodebeskrivelser og beløpet selvsagt valgfritt. Bidraget går rett til jernverket. Tusen takk for alt jeg har fått inn hittil. Jeg takknemlig for hver eneste kron.
We're on. So you guys, you could just start presenting yourself by name and what you play in the band. So just to have your voices clear.
Sure. My name is Matt and I play guitar.
I'm Scott. I play bass and sing or whatever you want to call it in Repulsion.
So founding members of Repulsion here.
Uh-huh.
I thought we could start at the beginning, as we always do in an interview. Repulsion started around 1986, but before this, you were in a band called Tempter, and then Genocide. Could you tell us about your early musical history, starting with Tempter and continuing through Genocide, and what was it, Ultraviolence? And
yeah.
Oh, boy. Scott, why don't you go?
Yeah, it all started, I mean, it started with, really, Matt and I playing together started when we'd known each other since we were in Scouts when we were like 8 or 10 years old. And we sort of lost contact after we lived in the same neighborhood, but we didn't really run in the same circles for years. And then in middle school, which is like, you know, ninth grade or so, at the end of middle school, I ran into Matt at school one day. We started going to the same school, and he came to my house after school one day, and I was playing him a bunch of heavy metal records, and he went out and bought a guitar after that, and we started playing music together. We started out like making little stop motion animation horror movies and stuff together, and then it's sort of you know, I've always been a music fanatic, and Matt, it rubbed off on Matt, so we sort of started collaborating on music, kind of put the movie thing aside and started collaborating on music. It was just much easier to do, for one, and so we started playing music, and over the years we kind of just kept going in and out of having a band and not having a band, and the longer it went on, the more focused we became, and all the other guys that we knew started falling off to the side, getting girlfriends and jobs and growing up, basically. And Matt and I just didn't want to grow up. We just wanted to be in a band. So we started just really focusing on that and really got intense about it for a while. And that was the period when the Repulsion songs were written. And that was after having gone through the names Genocide, Ultraviolence, back to Genocide, and
Tempter. Let's go back to Tempter. Oh yeah, Tempter was what, 84?
Yeah, 84.
And that 84. Was a cover band, wasn't it?
Well, mostly, yeah. It actually came together with a song that we had written, but we only had one song. The song was called Armies of the Dead.
Yeah.
And we only had one song, but we knew a bunch of other Metallica and Hellhammer and things like that.
Slayer, GBH,
yeah. so that naturally went into the set as well, you know. And then we played our very first show that Scott and I ever actually performed together at a punk do-it-yourself sort of hall party show is what we called them. And that was our first gig as Tempter. And I think we did like maybe a handful after that. And then it was gone. We decided to completely refocus what we were doing and write original songs. And then we went right to Ultraviolence, right, Scott? In like 85?
No, first it was Genocide.
First it was Genocide.
Yeah, then it was Ultraviolence. Then we went back to Genocide for some reason.
Yeah. And then that brings us up to about 85. And me and Scott took a summer and joined Death. most people don't know that because we didn't actually record with Death. Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, okay. Mm. Give me your email address. I'll send you. There's one picture that we have.
Wow.
Of me and Scott with Chuck and Cam Lee. That's the only picture that I know of in existence of the actual Death lineup that summer. But anyway, we did that for a summer. It fell apart. Then we came back and started really, really focusing on Genocide and getting the song ideas and musical concepts that Scott and I wanted to get together. We started really pulling that together. And then how long did that last, Scott? About 6 months or so? And then we started doing Repulsion.
You put out a few demos with Genocide.
Yeah. Basically, the band was called Genocide, and just all the Repulsion was a name change.
Yeah.
And that happened like shortly before or around the time that we recorded the album, because we were just starting to get a lot of emails. Or not emails. It's so funny how your mind plays tricks on you when you think back. But we started getting a lot of letters and from other bands claiming that they were Genocide and that they'd been around longer. And I didn't want to argue. I didn't really care for the name anyway. It was just something that we grabbed when we were kids from a Judas Priest song. And I never really cared for it. And I had already written a song called Repulsion. And I really liked that word. And so it was like a no-brainer. The only reason we hadn't already changed the name is because, you know, we were kind of known. We were starting to get known as Genocide. And I'm like, well, it's too late to change the name now. But once the other bands started challenging our right to the name, I was just like, this is a no-brainer. Just change the name. Simple. I never had to think about it. It was like Repulsion. That's it. We're done.
Mm. Yeah. So it was a name change, but nothing really changed internally in terms of the direction that we were going in songwriting-wise. And we had a lot of the same songs written. The songs that would go on to become Horrified, or The Slaughter of the Innocent demo, which brings us up to 86.
Yeah, because the Slaughter of the Innocent was supposed to be the first album. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Well,
it was never intended to be a demo. It was intended to be an album, but we weren't getting any record deals. So the thought was between us and this guy Doug Earp, who used to help the band out a lot, was let's record our own album and then shop it to record labels. So we recorded the album and then shopped it to record labels, and we got the same reaction that we got when we sent them our first demo. So we ended up just releasing it as a cassette, but that was never the intention. Was this is going to be our album, but it just didn't turn out that way.
Yeah. So basically when there was very little label interest in the time after we recorded that demo, well, what Scott says, our album, we just basically then released it as a demo, the Slaughter of the Innocent demo. It was a cassette demo. Is your thing okay?
Yeah, I'm just putting up the sound.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no problem.
At that point, I think all the energy and expectations that we put into it started to implode a little bit, and we kind of started to come apart, and we just started to move on. And the Repulsion story for me doesn't really pick up. I mean, we played some gigs here and there locally, but the Repulsion story for me didn't really pick up again until 1989 when that demo was released as an album by Necrosis Earache Records.
So in many ways you were split up for a few years or just messing around without having a plan?
Yeah. It wasn't like a formal, hey, we're done, but it was just kind of like we lost interest in it.
Sort of drifted apart.
Yeah.
The band honestly never really had like a super, aside from Matt and I being very focused on getting something accomplished, it wasn't like a really tight-knit band of people. It was more like out of necessity. You know what I mean? It was like we weren't like best friends with the drummer. The other guitarist also was actually, on the other hand, you know, he was a very good friend of ours, but we never envisioned having another guitar player until we recorded our first proper demo, and we had to do it live in the studio, so we needed we wanted two guitar tracks, and Matt wasn't able to do an overdub, so we brought our friend in and taught him all the songs so that there'd be a rhythm track on our demo. And that was how he ended up in the band. But yeah, so after we recorded the album and the label interest wasn't really there, it was very easy for the band to just sort of drift apart, because we weren't, it's not like we hung out, aside from Matt and I, we didn't hang out together all the time. And Aaron, the other guitar player that I just discussed, had his son was born, I would say probably 3 or 4 weeks after we finished recording the album. So in fact, I know we recorded the album in June, and it was maybe a week after, because we were supposed to play in Toronto with Slaughter, and he wasn't going to play the show because his son was born. So it was that fast after that the band just sort of started splintering.
Was that the time you were stopped at the border?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. You've done your research.
I read the crazy interview the Laurent guy did with you some time ago.
Yeah.
So I've done some research. Yeah. Yeah, but what about, I read that you had some trouble with holding on to drummers? Or that finding a drummer that
I think that was the death era.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we lost our drummer in death, Cam Lee, and we couldn't find a drummer. But as far as Repulsion goes, I mean, we, in the old days, it was just Dave Grave, you know?
I think she's referring to the fact that we, like where we lived, there were no drummers, mm-hmm. and we sort of found a guy that didn't really fit the bill, and just sort of with his you know efforts and talent sort of molded him into the guy that we wanted. Like when he started playing with us, he wasn't into speed metal or death metal or thrash. He liked punk rock, you know. He was a punk rock drummer, but he was more than willing to give it a shot, you know.
And we were asking him to do things that very few other drummers had ever done before, you know. I mean, the whole blast beat thing was something that we didn't even, you know, we knew we wanted to get faster and faster and faster, but we didn't realize that playing a whole song with a blast beat we didn't really know what that meant at that point. We just knew we wanted it, you know. And so there wasn't like any drummers for him to emulate or look up to, you know. It was just kind of like, so yeah, me and Scott kind of had to mold him into what we wanted, you know.
If there was a guy living in our town that played like Dave Lombardo or Lars Ulrich at the time, Repulsion never would have happened the way it did, you know. We probably wouldn't be considered like an innovative band, because we probably would have played something right. along the lines of like a really dirty, trashy Slayer type of thing, you know, because that's what we were going for in a lot of ways. We wanted to be fast and heavy and really nasty sounding. We always liked really nasty sounding stuff with distorted bass, like Venom and Discharge and stuff. So we probably would have been like a more raw, nasty version of Slayer had we had a drummer that could play that type of drum beats. But Dave couldn't even do that, which is a very hard thing to do, probably harder than playing a blast beat. But it requires, you know, just really fast hands on the hi-hat and the ride cymbals and stuff. So to get around that, we were like, okay, just cheat on that a little bit. And when you cheat, you can hear it. So if you speed it up, the faster you speed it up, you don't hear that so much. And it turns into the happy accident of, you know, inventing blast beats or whatever, you know.
So you guys weren't really easy to work with. You were doing your own thing and trying to drag the drummer in it.
Yeah.
More or less. I mean, you know, the way bands work, There's always one or maybe two people that have to give orders, you know, because a band needs to have that focus. Otherwise, there's no voice. That, you know what I mean? So you definitely run the risk of someone not liking, how you treat them, but that comes with the territory.
Yeah. We had the vision, you know.
But I also heard that Dave's background was one of the reasons you wanted to have him as a drummer, not just because he was a punk drummer, but also things he had done.
There is the little, you know, incident of his being arrested for grave robbing when he was 17 years old. So, yeah, that was how he came to our attention, really. We knew, I knew of Dave before that. Matt may have too, but just from the scene, like not really like anything else, just never really talked to the guy or anything. But when we got back from Florida, we were in Doug Earp's record shop, just trying to, and just kind of thinking about out loud about who should we get to play drums for our band. And Doug was like, what about Dave Hollingshead, you know, Bonehead. Doug called him Bonehead. That was the nickname that all the people in the punk scene like gave him after the whole grave robbing incident was Bonehead. So he looked at the bulletin board in the record shop and he had cut the article out of the paper about Dave's bust. And if you look at the inner sleeve of Horrified, that newspaper clipping is the actual one that was hanging in the record store the day that we found out about what he had done. And then after he started playing with us, I just dubbed him Dave Grave. You know, just, I don't know how, it just happened at rehearsal one day, or I might have said it on stage, I might have introduced him as Dave Grave, and then just stuck after that. And he's just been Dave Grave ever since.
Nice detail.
Yeah.
But could you tell us about the Horrified album? Because you only gave out one album, and this one is not half an hour long. It's 29 minutes and 18 songs.
Yeah.
While other bands mostly play songs which are like 3 to 5 minutes, you decided to make them really short, and there should be a lot of them. Why?
Well, you know, the songs are. The songs aren't really that short if you played them at a normal tempo. So I get my point is that everything is there. It's not like an incomplete song, or it's not the songs aren't really stylized in terms of their arrangement to be super short. They have a full feature, you know, to them. A verse, a chorus, a verse, one or two guitar solos, another verse, and then a chorus, and then it ends or whatever, just like a normal song. But we just play it so fast. So it's probably a couple of albums worth of material if you played it at a normal thrash beat, you know?
If we were playing the songs at the speed that Slayer's playing on Rain and Blood, the album would be, you know...
It'd be two albums.
It'd be 50 minutes long or 55 minutes long. And also, another reason why there are so many songs is because they're short. And DRI was a big band in like 84, 85, and their records, they had a 7-inch that had 22 songs on it, and it was one of our favorite records. And then they came out with a full length called Dealing With It that was probably 35 minutes long, and it had 20 songs on it or something like that. So that was sort of the template. It was like, oh, these really fast hardcore bands that we like, their albums have 18 or 20 songs on them, and that was like, okay, if we have 30 minutes worth of material, that's an album.
Yeah, that gave us permission to do it, you know, in my mind. That gave me permission to do what we did. But at the same time, the songs, the DRI songs, some of them are just a few, you know, 10 seconds long or whatever. So they're very stylized. And ours, I don't really see them as being all that stylized in terms of their arrangement. But anyway.
Rain and Blood, I think, is also about 28 or 29 minutes long.
That's true.
You know? And that came out shortly after we recorded Horrified. So, I don't know, I felt like I have a short attention span anyway, so, which sounds funny because I can listen to like 20-minute prog songs, but, you know, they have a lot of parts or Now, when it comes to pop music, I think I like short and sweet, and that's kind of how our songs have the very similar arrangement to a song like a Britney Spears song or something. You know, it's all a very common pop arrangement style. You know, like a radio. That's how radio songs are edited: is verse, chorus, a little bridge, and then another verse and chorus, and the song is over. That's all of our songs are pretty much arranged.
Solo,
yeah. Guitar solo, synth solo, bridge, yeah.
Saxophone solo.
Do you have those on the Horrified album?
No, we couldn't afford it.
Yeah, we couldn't afford that.
Han satt der i McCaféen med pensumboka og en latte, og for tredje gang bladde han en side tilbake og leste den på nytt. Og igjen var det som om ordene som sto der bare stokket seg og ikke lenger hadde noen betydning. Men han så at alle andre som satt der klarte å jobbe. Så hva var egentlig problemet hans, annet enn det åpenbare? At eksamen var tre dager unna, og han bare en tredjedel inn i pensum. Og det er sånne ting som gjør at noen tar opp en vindusplass her hele dagen. Men sånn er livet. Og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Forsiktig nå.
Ja da, det er alltid litt å gå på med den sensoren, skjønner du. Hæ? Sånn?
Ja, det var jo god.
Hva var det?
Med bilforsikring super i Storebrand er du forberedt på overraskelser. Storebrand. Oi sann. Du beholder blant annet bonusen ved parkeringsskade. Storebrand. Invester i fremtiden.
Even though if you the stories you've told now, they show that you weren't the first ones to do the short songs or the fast songs.
Yeah.
But even though you're one of the bands that stand as a cornerstone in the death metal, grindcore, crossover, or whatever you call it, genre, why do you think you stand as a rock after all these years? Because many bands refer to you when talking about where they get their inspiration from.
Yeah,
that sort of answers the question.
Yeah, that answers the question. That's what I was going to say. I mean, one day I was talking to Shane Embry from Napalm Death and in Los Angeles, and I asked him, you know, who was the biggest influence on you guys, Napalm Death? He said Repulsion. And then a few weeks later, I ran into Oscar Garcia from Terrorizer. And I asked him, who was the biggest influence on you guys? Was it Napalm Death? He said, no, it was Repulsion. You know, and then if you ask Jeff Walker from Carcass, he'll say that, you know, that we were a big influence on those guys too. I couldn't determine that, so I asked. I asked the people that were the leaders, you know, in their own right, you know, and people that are looked up to in the scene as leaders, the more known ones, and that's what they said.
Yeah, I think it's just when you have people that have made as much impact as Napalm Death and Entombed and Carcass and bands like that, they're very influential bands, you know, more influential than Repulsion as far as the reach that they achieved, you know. They achieved way more than we did because they you know, a lot of things. They were probably more, they were more prolific for one thing, and they also just came along at just the right time where they could all get record deals and press and everything like that. It all worked out in our favor because when those bands got big and started doing interviews, they mentioned our name, and it just made kids interested in Repulsion. And it just sort of, once the internet and everything came along, it all just sort of perpetuates itself. And at this point, it seems like Repulsion is more popular than ever just because of, but I think that's the same for, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine in Sweden yesterday. We were talking about how all bands exist now. They're like, all bands play, everybody's playing. All these old men are like, back at it again because they never wanted to stop, but sometimes you have to feed yourself, so you have to stop and get a job or move on, you know, but what everyone really wants to do is play music.
Yeah.
So now with all these like amazing festivals all over the world, and the internet and the connectivity that people have. Old bands like Witchfinder General and Pagan Altar and all these new wave of British heavy metal bands, they can come back out of the woodwork and play shows, and for the people that they always wanted to play in front of, and the people that always wanted to see them can see them. And it may be a little different, they may be a little heavier on the bottom and lighter on top, but you know, it's all fun in the end. And everybody, if you have the right expectations going into seeing a band that is made up of a bunch of 50-year-old guys who haven't played together in 30 years, sometimes it can be pretty damn good, you know?
It does. It can.
Yeah.
I've seen examples.
Yeah.
But maybe we should talk a bit more about the Horrified album, because after this you kind of gave up for a while, and then you came back again, and then you gave up for 10 years.
I was in the army, actually. Scott and I were the core music writers of the group. I joined the army, and those guys, the remaining members, Aaron, Scott, and Dave, actually came back together and started to write songs. And they wrote some songs and put out a 7-inch, and sort of continued and did a few shows, right, Scott?
Yeah.
Did a few shows?
Yeah.
But why did you guys stop playing?
Well, we never stopped. You came back in. And what happened was, we started playing around with the band again after the Earache record came out, and we started like seeing, oh wow, maybe people actually do have started to appreciate the band or whatever. Like maybe we can finally do what we wanted to do before with the band. And I don't know. I guess it just, the album was inspirational when it came out, and you finally see your work like presented in the way that, you know, everything you've ever, you know, back then everyone bought albums, and I'd been buying them since I was a kid, and to see my own work pressed on a record was had a pretty profound effect on us. So we started playing again, and then Matt like came home to visit, and we did a show with Matt, and you know, everyone was excited, and then Matt got out of the army, and we just kept writing. And at the same time, you know, responsibilities, your life is coming up, and the songs, on top of all that, the songwriting, I think there were songs we were writing were pretty good, actually. They weren't bad songs. It was just a different the level of, like, you know, the other night when we were playing in London, my friend said we sounded really nasty, you know, like, how did you guys get that nasty sound? And I'm like, that's what we always wanted to sound, was nasty, like I was saying earlier. And the new songs didn't sound nasty. They were heavy, and they were dark, and they were death metal, and they had blast beats, and they were way more diverse in a way. They had more varied tempos, but they weren't just teeth grinding, rusty razor to the throat nasty the way our old songs are. And I just felt like we weren't inspired enough at that time around. And I moved away. I moved from Michigan to Chicago. And then Matt started another death metal band at that point. So, and then the whole time I was gone, shortly after I moved to Chicago, I joined Cathedral. So I think we've always been around music and playing music. It just hasn't necessarily always gone far enough to put out a record or whatever. But we've always been playing music. It's not like we've been away, you know, farming or doing something. You know, we've always been around being creative.
But Cathedral is quite different from what you came from.
In some ways, yeah. But I mean, it's another form of musical extremity, which I think is not that different. You know, it's like the tempo is different, but other than that, it's a lot of similarities. You know, I mean, to me, just playing music, it's not really that different for me.
What made you come back after 10 years in Repulsion Silence? Was that because of the internet revolution and everyone wanting you back? Or was it because... No, it was a reissue, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you were forced to come back.
Oh, you're talking about, okay, now we're up to 2003.
Yeah, because okay. After 91, yeah. you were yeah. in silence.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, in 2003, they did the reissue with the demo tracks and everything, which was really neat. And then at that point, Scott and I moved to Los Angeles in 1995. Scott, it came out a few years late, after that.
Yeah, 98.
So we both were out there, but we hadn't talked about Repulsion or anything in a long time. Just kind of like, you know, fun memories kind of thing. Now, after 2003, after the reissue, we just started to, you know, maybe toy with the idea. And then people started to contact our record label, promoters, Milwaukee, what is it called?
Milwaukee Metal Festival.
Metal Festival.
Yeah, that reminds me. We were talking about this yesterday in an interview, and I just remembered that actually Matt Jacobson, who, you know, the founder of Relapse Records, sort of, you know, got us pumped up about playing. It took him a while. He had to really convince us to play at Milwaukee Metal Fest. And, you know, he when that reissue came out, he really wanted us to play Milwaukee Metal Fest. And he rallied really hard to get us to do that show. And we thought it was going to be just one show and that was it. And that's when the Rich, the guy that was at the time doing in-house booking for Relapse, said, well, you've done a show now, let's just put your name on the booking roster and see what happens. And then offers started coming in. And then, you know, since then, it's just been the internet and everything else, Choosing Death, Albert Mudrian's book, Choosing Death, and things like that coming along at the right time, and just sort of pumped everything just kind of blew momentum. Up. Yeah.
There's a momentum that's being built up over the years after the reissue. And with every gig that we do, people seem to get excited more and more about us, you know, playing someday in Portugal or South America or you know, Australia or Japan. We haven't played in those places. But who knows, maybe that's where we'll be next year, you know?
We're doing the slowest world tour ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Piecemeal. 4 or 5 gigs at a time, we should have conquered the world in another 10 years or so. But yeah, you know, this is our first time in this part of the world, and we've been getting fan mail from Sweden and Norway and Denmark and Finland since 86 or 84, 85 really, you know? So it's amazing to finally be here. We're playing in Oslo tomorrow night. It's pretty exciting for us, you know. And we played in London the other night for the first time ever, in Holland, where some of the most legendary metal fests of the 80s took place in Eindhoven, you know. We landed in Eindhoven. Like, this is where they used to have the Aardshock Festival, you know, like Metallica, you know, 83 playing these places. And so for us, it's great. It's like a really nice reward to finally play these plays. Even though in some, you know, maybe musically we deserve it, but in a lot of ways we don't really deserve it because we weren't around. We haven't been around.
We never really paid our dues in a way. Yeah. We just did the one recording and the fans took it to where it is today. We didn't really take it. Yeah. You know how some bands have gotten tour and tour and tour and write and write and record. Worked their asses off. We did one thing and we just kind of went, oh, this is hard. Let's quit. You know? And the fans just keep it alive.
We're very spoiled in that way.
Yeah.
We've been able to play a lot of great shows and achieve a lot of great things very late in this... you know, very late in the game for Repulsion, you know?
Yeah. Apparently, that's the way to do it.
It seems
it
like
is.
It, yeah.
It is. It definitely feels good.
Yes. Yeah.
So you guys can't really put out a new album now? Or have you thought about that?
Well, you know, it's always there. Thoughts about it, but, you know, it's difficult to... Once you've let it go this long, it's difficult to sort of... everyone has this, like... maybe even slightly overblown opinion about horrified. Like it's held up to this really high standard, and how do you I don't know where it is. I don't know where that level is. So how do you get there? You know, yeah, it's
not necessarily a can't either. It's more like a won't. You know, we won't likely pursue that. You know, horrified is what it is. A big part of the magic of horrified, at least the way that Scott and I think of it, is it was the age. You know, the attitude we had at that time. We were very young. I was 16 years old. He was 17 years old when we wrote the music. Yeah. No. That's when it was released. We wrote those songs in 85, 86.
Yeah. When it was recorded, I think I was 20 and Matt was probably 17 or 18 when we actually did the recording. Mm. But we've been plugging away at it since, you know, 9th or 10th grade, like trying to get a band together that was actually accomplished enough to have a whole repertoire of songs and be able to headline a show with a full set of originals. And you know, once we got to that level, look at how many bands have done, like, you know, your Destruction shirt there just makes me think of them. They have, like, you know, 15 albums or 20 albums out. You know, they've been working their asses off ever since they started.
But only 3 of the albums are good, so.
Well, that's
opinion.
But, you know, the thing is, you know, they're still working. They're still doing it. Yeah. And we have been off doing other things. And so it's cool. It's like, it's something at this point that we don't take for granted. So, like, just throwing an album out, we would never allow that to happen, because it would have to be as inspired as horrified, at least as inspired as horrified, and that's almost impossible to achieve, because we were so driven back then. We were so, it was like a bright flame burning. We were so obsessed and so driven to make that record.
I can't
imagine being that driven to make a record in any genre at this point. It's just like, life is so much more complicated now than it was when I was 17 years old.
Yeah. So I think if we did do another album, it wouldn't sound like horrified. It couldn't sound like horrified, and so therefore we might not ever do it. You know.
I think our drummer Cole would have to write all the songs.
Yeah. He's the resident Repulsion expert. Scott and I are just kind of like, okay.
That's the guy sitting there?
Yes.
he refuses to do interviews, though, so don't even ask.
Don't ask.
Okay. Yeah, Axel doesn't do interviews.
Axel.
You're the main guy, so. But you could just start some other band and make new music.
That could happen.
Yeah, that could happen. We're definitely getting more inspired to do stuff. He's just did a really awesome album with Cathedral. It's released this month, and it's fucking amazing. And so he's off and running with other stuff. And who knows? Maybe we'll collaborate on something in the future.
But the stupid part here now is that you're going to the Sneeflame show, and you have to eat. And so we've been talking for 35 minutes now. But I wonder if you guys could maybe pick 8 songs that I could play on the show, because when I do interviews, I want the bands to pick the songs. So if you guys could pick 8 metal or...
Just any band?
Yeah, any band, any song.
Hellhammer, okay. Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
We want to play Bathory, Sacrifice, because we're in Scandinavia. We should play a Bathory song.
Apropos.
How about Dark Throne, Hiking Metal Punks?
Right.
That one goes out to Ted and Fenris.
Mm-hmm.
This guy.
And then Merciful Fate. You pick Evil, Black Funeral. We're playing in Copenhagen.
Okay,
the
so day after
here.
There's 4.
Okay.
Bathory, Dark Throne, Hellhammer, and Merciful Fate. And
so,
you?
Let's see. Celtic Frost has to be something from Morbid Tales. Procreation of the Wicked. Venom. Heaven's on Fire.
Which we used to play in our set back in like 84. Yeah, a guitar player who was religious, and he would just shake his head when I sang the lyrics to that song.
Your other lyrics weren't any better.
Let's see, what else? Slayer, in honor of Jeff Hanneman, Piece by Piece. And who else? I'm pressured now. It's got to be good. You know what? I'll go back to our original cover set and choose Motor Breath by Metallica.
Awesome. Makes a good list. Yeah. Just up in my alley.
Cool.
So last but not least, could you make a jingle for the show?
Just, go ahead, Scott. Scott has the
The normal, my name is blah, 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 I'm from this band, and you're listening to Jernverket. I don't know if you can say that. Jernverket.
Jernverket.
Yeah.
Is that right? Jernverket.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do it with some gusto?
Yeah, that would be cool. Okay, I'll just keep this here.
Jernverket. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want me to just say hello? This is Scott Carlson from Repulsion, and you're listening to Jernverket, like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Hello, this is Scott Carlson from Repulsion, and you're listening to Jernverket.
Du har hørt et intervju med Repulsion innspilt I 2013. Likte du det, kan du for eksempel høre pratene med Autopsy og Merciless. Neste vecka skal vi ta en prat med kunstner Linn Halvorsrød, redaktør for boka Påskeaften 1996. Episoden blir krydret med utdrag fra boka, lest av skribentene selv.
Hvilken band spiller du I da?
Jeg spiller ikke band, men det der Isan fra Emperor.
Ja, det der, tenkte jeg.
Om jeg ikke husker helt fel, så hadde den på seg en brun olgenser. Det synes jeg var rart.
Hvis ikke du gjør det ennå, så må du abonner på Jernverket podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverket.com. Fortell alle du kjenner om podden, legg gjerne igjen en god anmeldelse der du hører, og vil du bidra med noen kroner til Jernverket, så kan du gi støtte via Patreon eller Vips. Info I episodebeskrivelser. Og husk på å følge Jernverket på Instagram og Facebook, der det konkurranser, diskusjoner og musikktips. Akkurat nå kan du vinne 2 audiopain-skiver fra Katakomben og Duplicate Records. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv, og nå inn I siste ordinære sesong med Jernverket, men det blir hardrock-intervju hver fredag, til og med 2. juli. Etter det får vi se hva som skjer. Vi høres!
Han satt der I McCaféen med pensumboka og en latte, og for tredje gang bladde han en side tilbake og leste den på nytt. Og igjen var det som om ordene som sto der bare stokket seg og ikke lenger hadde noen betydning. Men han så at alle andre som satt der klarte å jobbe. Så hva var egentlig problemet hans, annet enn det åpenbare? At eksamen var 3 dager unna, og han bare en tredjedel inn I pensum. Og det sånne ting som gjør at noen tar opp en vindusplass her hele dagen. Men sånn livet. Og McDonald's bare en liten del av det, tross alt.